religious liberty. It was an abiding theme of what the pilgrims came to the new country searching for. And today, it's the centerpiece of the American culture wars. So, does the concept, as it was understood then, share anything with the concept as we know it now? Dr. Peter Gardella is the author of the book, American Civil Religion, What Americans Hold Sacred. And Dr. Gardella joins us right now on State of Belief Radio. Peter, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Weldon.
You focus your book on what Americans have held sacred throughout history, both religious concepts and purely secular concepts. What role did religion play in the self-concept of the earliest settlers, and what secular components of their adventure was or has become culturally religious?
Ooh, big question. Religion, of course, was pretty central, certainly to the pilgrims who came to Plymouth. They were going, as you say, in search of religious liberty. Now, down in Jamestown, they're reputed to have been a little more secular. But even at Plymouth, you know, they didn't really separate these things. There weren't any clergy, you know, prominent on the Mayflower. It really was Elder Brewster and you know, the lay people who led. And there was an Anglican priest with the first settlers at Jamestown who brought a big cross on and set up his religion. So, I don't think this differentiation really mattered to them. It doesn't matter very much to me either, honestly, because I define religion as the system of non-rational commitments that holds life together. Lego, it comes from. I bind. It has to do with what's obligatory. And a lot of people might say the money-making is a secular thing that has become sacred, but again, I would disagree with that, because although they certainly wanted to prosper at Jamestown and at Plymouth, they had some skepticism about greed. They had some skepticism, and they held all property in common for a while at Jamestown. And they certainly had a lot of skepticism about individuals seeking great riches for themselves in both places. John Winthrop, the first governor of Massachusetts Bay, criticized that idea of seeking great fortunes to the exclusion of other things.
Well, Dr. Gardella, have we sacralized these first settlers?
I think so, yes. It's hard to think of them without a little glow of reverence. I think they deserve it, though. I mean, a person like Pocahontas or John Smith, Brewster at Plymouth, or Governor Bradford at Plymouth. I mean, these were heroes. They lived lives that were like something out of Star Trek, honestly. If you think about going across the Atlantic and adapting, you know, to this new circumstances. And so, although, yes, I'd say we have sacralized them, on the other hand, I think they deserve being revered.
So if we had been there at Plymouth when the boat docked and talked to the first people getting off the boat, and the question was, why are you here? Would they have said, because we're searching for religious freedom?
Not all of them. Some of them were servants. Some of them were people who were just coming along hoping for a better life, maybe an opportunity to get some land that they did not have in England. The leaders, certainly Brewster and Governor Bradford, would have said something along those lines. Miles Standish, the soldier, he might not have. You know, he was a, like John Smith, you had to have a military expert with you. They were explorers, you know, and not all of them were necessarily had Christianity uppermost in their mind.
Do you see any connection between those early ideas and what we have come today to call religious liberty and oppression? Because it seems confused today. Was it confused then?
They wanted liberty. They wanted freedom. I don't think that they were confused about that. And freedom itself has become a religious dimension of life for Americans. I mean, when I talk about American civil religion, people often will say, and a lot of the evangelicals, in fact, these days despise American civil religion. They will say, oh, this is the worship of America. We want Jesus. You know, we don't want American civil religion. But the point about American civil religion is that it is not the worship of America. American civil religion enshrines the value, above all, of personal freedom and of political democracy and cultural tolerance and peace. Those values, I think, are really what people are worshiping when they are practicing American civil religion. And God is not necessarily part of that. Can be, sometimes isn't.
And sometimes God seems to be wearing the cloak of an American.
Well, less and less. I would argue less and less because, you know, if you look at what's happened in a place like Plymouth, that was much more true in the 1920s than it is today.
Since
1970, they've been having a National Day of Mourning at Plymouth, and the descendants of the Wampanoag Indians who were there greeting the Puritans when they came on shore, they buried Plymouth Rock in 1970. They threw the model of the ship's captain of the Mayflower overboard. But they have since been integrated, at least uneasily. But there's a plaque for the National Day of Mourning there. Their ceremonies go on every year peaceably. At Jamestown, it's gone from a place that was celebrating just the English, and Queen Elizabeth came in 1957 and celebrated just the English, to a place that explicitly celebrates the meeting of three great peoples, the Indians, the English, and the Africans who came to Jamestown. And that's what the National Park Service thing is about. And in Washington today, you have places like the United States Holocaust Memorial and Museum, the National Museum of the American Indian. So even Washington, even the District of Columbia itself, is not wearing the cloak of an American as much as it once did.
Exactly. Dr. Gardella, if we view that historical arc through the lens of secular religion as you describe it in your book, can that help us understand the power of the idea of religious oppression in this country when, in fact, true examples of that abound in other parts of the world beyond any that we could imagine happening here?
I think that, we're profoundly, even providentially, dare I say it, blessed in that regard. And even with the war on terror and all of the struggles that have happened since 9/11, the opportunities that has created for religious oppression here, there's been surprisingly little of it. And the United States is still the great force against religious oppression worldwide.
Yeah. I am of the opinion that where we are in religious freedom today and in support for it is a very confusing place for many reasons. And I have the sense that religious freedom, as defined in the Constitution, has never been really secure in this nation. It's always been in trouble from one point of view or another. Do you think that has any credibility?
Oh, yes. I'm fond of saying you can separate church and state, but you can't separate religion and politics. The thing is that they both deal with life and death issues. So if you're going to go to war, religion is going to be involved, inevitably. You can't send people to kill and to die without invoking something of the basic commitments that hold life together. They're not going to die for oil, at least not consciously. It's going to have to be about something deeper than that. So whenever you're doing anything significant in the government, it's going to involve religion. People can't take their religion out of their heads and their hearts when they go to cast their ballots. No nation is without some civil religion. In some ways, the United States has to have one more urgently because we don't have any common native culture. We're using a borrowed language, borrowed land. We don't have a deep ethnic history. People become Americans by pledging allegiance. They become Americans by undertaking these commitments. It's the nation with the soul of a church, Chesterton said. It's the nation with the soul of a voluntary church.
Yeah, yeah. For those of us who want to use some period of this Thanksgiving celebration to really think about our nation and where we need to be, based on those twin concepts of religion and liberty, give us a subject for academic meditation.
We live in an age of religious warfare. Since 1947, 1948, probably the greatest age of religious warfare since the Reformation. And we thought we were beyond religious warfare, but we're not. Mm-hmm. And I think that on this Thanksgiving, we should give thanks that our nation has been spared the worst of it so far and ask whatever power we implore for the wisdom to steer through the rest of this to a peaceful destination. Peace was very prominent in the early settlers' desires. They were tired of war. They'd come from a Europe that had been racked by religious war for more than a century, and they were seeking peace. And I think they found it, by and large, in the end, although obviously with some problems. But we need, I think, to reflect on that and ask for this wisdom to get through this particular moment of threat to religious liberty and of religious warfare.
Dr. Peter Gardella is a member of the Department of World Religions at Manhattanville College in Purchase, New York. He's the author of the book, American Civil Religion, What Americans Hold Sacred. Dr. Gardella, it's been a pleasure talking with you and exploring this complex aspect of the American character. I really do thank you for being with us today on State of Belief Radio, and I hope you have a good Thanksgiving.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure.